Hello and welcome to Only Stupid Answers, the best dang podcast you could put your little ears into. Thank you for joining us once again. Every Monday, you get a freshly made, hot out of the oven podcast from your old pal Sam and EJ. Don't pop that in your mouth too quick. You're going to burn yourself.
Yeah, you got to let it cool down just a little bit.
To cool. But thank you for joining us, especially during the quarantine and all the fun stuff that's happening in the world right now. We appreciate you supporting us. And we have a very special episode for you today. We have a very special guest joining us for the very first time, Mr. RB3. You might know him from the Schmodown, but also the First Cut podcast, First Cut YouTube channel and the Meaning of Podcasts, where you guys dive into the filmography and discuss social and political themes. And your guys' goal is to shine a light on diverse voices and highlight their social impact on film. You can catch the Meaning of Podcast every Friday, anywhere you get your podcasts. And we'll have links down below in our own podcast, so you can go join them, as well as subscribing to their YouTube channel, The First Cut. RB3, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing this very early Sunday morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me. I'm really just honored to be here. I've been listening to the Only Stupid Answers podcast for quite some time now. I've been following you guys for a long time. And obviously, we've seen each other at Schmodown and things like that. But, you know, just happy to be here as a guest.
I mean, no, man, really appreciate you taking the time to join us. And also, if we mind talking about it really early on, can you just tell us a little bit about The First Cut and the Meaning of Podcast? Like, when did that start for you? When did you guys start putting that together? And how's it been so far?
Me and myself and Andres Cabrera Ace, we started the Meaning of Podcast back in September 2017. And then we've just been doing episode after episode where we talk about filmmakers and like their individual filmographies and how, you know, in film you could kind of tell what a filmmaker stands for and what he represents, like through his movies. So we've just been kind of breaking down that since September 2017. And then in 2018, we started our YouTube channel, First Cut, where we decided to post our podcast episodes along with movie reviews and along with other kinds of content like video essays and all that kind of stuff. So we've just been building up, and we added Sabrina Ramirez, who is our newest co-host for The Meaning Of and on our channel as well. So we've just been, you know, talking movies, celebrating movies. I love movies. It's always been a thing that I've enjoyed in my entire life. So I am just happy to just be a part of the community and be able to talk about it.
So I like your layout a lot on the channel. What has been, because I'm looking at it right now, you got movie reviews for newer films. You're doing a series called Netflix Roulette, where I'm guessing you just randomly choose whatever you can find on there. Are you watching, what's been I don't want to say worst, that's mean, you're dunking on it, but like, what's been the most challenging movie that you found on Netflix through Netflix Roulette so far?
What's the worst movie you've seen on Netflix? Who made it, and what's their social security number?
Give me their address number
so we can send letters.
Let's get him. Get him.
You know, it's weird because sometimes we get stuck with really, really bad movies. Like last week, we got stuck with Kardec, I think that's the name of it. And it's this like 19th century, like kind of biopic, but kind of horror movie. Like, and it's really weirdly made. I think it's a Portuguese movie, but it's all in French. So it's really crazy. I don't know if it's bad necessarily. Maybe I'm not like reading the subtitles right or something. But that's interesting to say the least. But sometimes we get stuck with good movies. Like I know when Andres was on there, he got The Pianist, which mm-hmm. you know is actually pretty good. And then our episode coming up this week, we decided to, you know, Netflix has the Black Lives Matter subcategory now. So we decided to pick a movie out of that. And we actually watched Malcolm X, the Spike Lee movie.
Very cool. That's actually on my, my list or whatever for me to check out. It is a little, I also saw another movie I saw pop up on Hulu that I was excited to check out was Casino. And anytime a movie cracks that 3-hour mark, it's like, I'll get to you.
Yeah.
One of these days, I might have to break you up into a mini series, but I'll get to you.
There's got to be an even stopping point. They had to know this. Like, you got to think about when it airs on FX and you put ads in there.
Exactly.
You got to think about when it's going to be on TBS, where it always laughs.
I got to ask for the First Cut. You guys got to do an interview with Josh Trank, director of Chronicle. Mm-hmm. And Fan Four Stick, everybody's favorite. Right. How did that come about? How was that? Like, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I got to shout out our co-host and our homie Sabrina Ramirez. She actually Josh Trank actually followed her, and then she followed him back, and then they started talking, and she invited him on our show. Nice. And he was really transparent, and obviously, like, I've actually been a big fan of his work, you know, from Chronicle and even his new movie Capone for a long time. So I was like really interested to talk to him, and we all had a lot of questions. So, you know, she sent him the link to our channel, and he like really loved it. Like, he loved the commentary that we did and everything like that. So he was super excited to come on and talk to us. And yeah, we had a great conversation about like the process of making Chronicle, the process of dealing with everything behind the scenes, like leading up to Fantastic Four. But you know, he always gets a lot of questions about the Fantastic Four thing. And that's kind of like the big thing that is like the main conversation point a lot of times with this guy. But we have a real conversation with him about filmmaking and about the technical and about the, you know, the craft of it all. He's really insightful. He's really informative, and he really dug our interview, and we really dug it too. So it's one of my favorite moments that we've had in our meeting of days too. So
very cool.
It's fantastic. I'm excited because I got it saved on my Spotify, so I'll be checking it out when I do my runs this week. I've been trying to check out as many other deep dive film podcasts as I can. But I think that's actually a pretty good transition. My camera is starting to freak out. Audio listeners, you don't care, but hey, if you are interested, you can support us over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Maybe you can help me buy a new cam link.
Yeah, you can watch
those tricky little devices. They are so finicky. If you accidentally step on it 7 times, all of a sudden it stops working. And I don't know. That sounds like a bad product to me. I don't know about you guys.
But if you want to see Sam's camera freak out live, you can go to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Be a part of that fun journey. But yeah, Sam,
it's working right now.
It's working right now. Sam, it sounded like you were going to transition into what we're into this week.
Slash how are you doing?
How are you doing?
I want it to sound like it's it's an old person in the park, like a sweet old person coming up, hand on the leg, being like, or on the shoulder. How you doing?
That's how you doing?
Like, how you doing? And that's when you get to break down and be like, I don't know, man. I don't know how it's going right now. For me, it's okay. This week, it was good. Like, I'll just say, my girlfriend and I went to one of the Black Lives Matter gatherings at the Hall of Justice in downtown LA. And it's been like difficult because we've been...
Sorry, when you say Hall of Justice, it sounds way cooler than it. We went to the Hall of Justice. Superman was there. He was like, yeah, everybody.
Yeah, we got there and it was like way lamer than
that. Yeah.
Like a bunch of armed police guards just like doing a lot of show of force and helicopter circling. It was a lot lamer than that. But, you know, hey, maybe if you stay there long enough, Batman will come. But we went and it was on a Wednesday. And apparently, you know, because like, a lot of learning right now, but... every Wednesday since, I believe, what happened in Ferguson, the riots in Ferguson, they've been doing these gatherings where the family members of people who were killed by the LAPD or other police departments, or they come out and speak. And there's also indigenous speakers who came out and other activists. And it was really cool. But like my girlfriend and I have been trying to be really careful just because we've been so diligent with COVID. And we want to show our support, and we want to be educated, and we want to support this movement and it's easy to like support this movement. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, how can you, you're a shithead if you're not supporting it. It was very moving to be a part of that this week and to be a part of the march for a little bit. But outside of that, this week I watched a movie called Dragon Slayer from the 80s. Do you remember this movie at all?
Sounds pretty cool. Sounds cool.
It's okay. It's okay. Like, let me actually find the actor who was the star of it. He was the foil to Mr. Bean in the hit American film Bean. Do you remember that movie? He was the foil for him. Peter McNichol, whatever. You recognize his face when you see it, but it's a movie that like barely has a plot, and it's got a very finicky CGI, but it's like, it's solid. It's okay. It's about a town, this castle that sacrifices a random woman every season so a dragon will stay asleep. Uh-huh. And one time, this newbie wizard tries to take out the dragon. It doesn't work, so the dragon comes and starts killing people, so he's got to go take out the dragon. But then the rest of the movie, it's really like genuinely like it was just a gathering of ideas. Like, it's just a loose bundle of ideas of like, you know, what would be cool if this wizard died earlier on, but then he came back later.
Yeah.
Sure. Cool. Yeah. All right, I'm following.
Oh, is this part of your like movie for every, was this D?
No, it was not. Oh, okay. D was Dying to Survive, which was a Chinese movie that was delightful.
Oh, I remember you telling us about that. Yeah.
Dying to Survive it's on Amazon Prime. You can watch it. Yeah, but one bummer, it's one of those Amazon, good for you for putting in like automatic subtitles for American viewers, but it's clearly done with a bot because it only lasts for as long as people speak. Mm-hmm. So if someone says, like, if a sentence in Mandarin takes less time to say in Mandarin than it does in English, it's like big wall of text and then it goes away immediately. It's like, well, I got the gist of what he was saying. Yeah. I don't know what that was. I don't know what that means. But that was very good. And also the season finale for What We Do in the Shadows premiered on FX. Ooh. Very good show. RB3, do you watch What We Do in the Shadows? Have you been checking it out?
I haven't, but I know my boy Andres, he's been like recommending it nonstop. I love the movie. Mm-hmm. Like Taika Waititi's, so the movie is like crazy. So I know, and I love everything FX does. I know they did that Dave show recently too. That was pretty good. So I really want to watch What We Do in the Shadows for sure.
I definitely want to check out Dave as well. That's on my list. I keep What We Do in the Shadows, by the way, season two is perfect. Like they got like season one, you could feel it's like, here's the setup from the movie, but different. And like you can see, it's like it's the same but different. And then you can kind of feel them trying to find their way. But by like halfway through season one, which is pretty short, they get it. And you're like, that's, and now here's the premise of the show, which is great. And then season two fully embraces that. And it's very, very good. So highly recommend checking that out. And Dave's on my list. Also, via the recommendation of our Discord audience, people have been recommending I give Avenue 5 one more try. It's the space comedy from the guy who was the showrunner for Veep, starring Hugh Laurie. Can't do it, gang. It's really bad. It's really bad. I'm sorry. I know you guys might like it, but it's really not doing it for me. But hey, let's have a discussion over our Discord, which you can join over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. RB3, though, let us know, how are you doing this week? And also, if there's anything new you're into or you want to shout out, go for it.
Yeah. Well, like you, Sam, I actually was at the same protest BLM LA, protest at the Hall of Justice. That's actually like the fifth protest I've been to. Nice. So I've been pretty much out there a lot. But for that one in particular, I was actually helping shoot a video with a YouTuber I work with, Anthony Padilla.
Yeah.
So he's a really great, we've been working together for a little bit over about a year and a half now. And, I was out there cam opping. He was interviewing protesters and getting like perspectives for a video and stuff like that. But I did that on Wednesday. And on the main thing I watched last week, though, that I was really excited about was the new Spike Lee movie on Netflix.
The Five Bloods.
Yeah. I actually wrote a review for it for Geeks of Color. Mm-hmm. That, you know, is available. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. You know, there's some issues with it for sure, but I think like overall it's a really great movie and it's really like prevalent movie that's like, you know, everything Spike Lee does is very relevant, very like today and very modern, but also has like this like timelessness to it too. Yeah. And The Five Bloods definitely had that as well. So I really appreciated that movie. And yeah, that's been the main thing I've been watching. I've also been checking out the new Steve Carell show, Space Force.
What do you Netflix. Think?
What I think is, yeah. I actually I know a lot of people have been like not liking it. I've actually been like, it's been okay. It's been good for me so far. Honestly, I like kind of like broad comedy, you know, and I also like how it kind of pairs like the dynamic between like science and military against each other. Because mm-hmm. I think in a lot of old movies, especially when you watch like movies from like the 1950s, like those like sci-fi movies, like The Thing from Another Planet, where it's like the military guy is like, we have to do this. And the scientist is like, no, this is actually a good idea. And then the military guy just like slaps it around and like lets it go or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think the Space Force show kind of plays on that dynamic, but it subverts it a little bit, where a lot of times the science guys are the more correct, give the more correct answers than the military guys. So I just like it on that level. It is dumb. And I also like it because they film it a lot at this college, Cal State Dominguez Hills, mm-hmm. which is
I was wondering what it was. Yeah, yeah. I knew it yeah. had to be in SoCal, but I also have never been to that campus before, so I wasn't familiar with it.
Yeah, it's funny because my high school was on that campus. The high school I went to was California Academy of Math and Science or whatever. Mm. So it's actually on the campus of CSUDH. So I used to literally walk by all the places that they walk by in that show like all the time.
That's nuts.
Cool. I went to CSUN. So like, you know, that the library is sky high, or it is the Starfleet in the new Star Trek movies. You know, it's like all that. It's always cool seeing stuff like that. But I thought John Malkovich did a really good job in Space Force. Like his stuff, I never found myself laughing out loud, which was what you expected to do in a Greg Daniels, Steve Carell show. But I did like the premise. Also, just a fun fact that I learned, or maybe not super fun fact, but I'll share it. I didn't realize why China was the antagonist of the series, and then I looked up that they're banned from the ISS. They are not allowed to be on the ISS because, well, it's America. We said that
they farted too much on the ISS. They were so farty up there that we're like, we can't.
We can't.
We're trapped in here. We're breathing the same air over and over again, and we gotta stop.
They were talking about though that it's all about proprietary technology. They're like, we can't have China up there because they don't want them to look at our tech and then bring it back and then copy it, which they've done apparently a lot. I don't know. It was just interesting reading, like kind of diving into that, of like why America and China have such a animosity when it comes to the space race. And also their space programs accelerated like crazy over the past 20 years. If you like look at, they landed on the far side of the moon. Like they've done all this stuff. Like they're moving real quick. So I thought that was interesting for them to be the foil for that series. But I actually kind of enjoyed it as well. Like I wasn't like crazy about it. If season two came out like next week, I'd take my time, you know, like I'd take my time getting to it, but I did not hate it at all.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But DJ, what about you?
So for me, I've been catching up on Rami. Season two of Rami dropped, I think it was last week as of this recording. And it is just like last season. And also, didn't he just win a Peabody Award? Anyway, congrats to him.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think he did. This season is very good. It continues to invest in that, like, putting Rami in the most awkward situations that you could possibly find. I just watched one episode. For those that have watched the series, let's just say it's the Atlantic City episode, and you'll know what I'm talking about. Some of the situations he's found himself in. But of course, this season, you know, it continues his journey of trying to find spiritual enlightenment, and he kind of attaches himself to a new religious leader played by Mahershala Ali, who, of course, what is unsurprising is how great he is. What is surprising is how Mahershala Ali continues to find new ways to remind you how great he is and how talented he is. There's one specific scene at the end of an episode where he has to talk to Rami about something that matters to both of them. And the journey he's able to take, it's not completely a monologue, but it's primarily him. This journey he's able to go on between being a religious leader while also expressing his own personal views on Rami and how it relates to the situation and navigating that. It's because I'm a lame nerd. It's just like, oh, I can't wait for Blade. It just gets me so amped because he's just such a great performer. And anytime you see him in anything, it almost makes me want to watch Green Book. Almost. Yeah. I won't because I don't care. But he's so good in Rami. It's like, you know, maybe I should give Green Book a shot. Maybe I'm being
too... Can I get an edit of just his scenes?
Just his scenes from the Green Book?
Yeah, just his scenes.
So I've been watching that and really been digging it. Highly recommend it. But I also wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about one of the big pop culture news that hit this week was the PS5 announcement. We got a lot of reveals of games and stuff like that. For me, the one that hit excited me the most was the new Horizon Forbidden West, which was a sequel to Horizon Zero Dawn, which was the first game I got. I got my PS4 like 2 years ago and got that game, and it's incredible. And I'm very excited to play the sequel. The trailer got me super amped. For those that don't know those games, it takes place in a far future where humanity's kind of recovering from the brink of extinction. And it's a world populated with giant robotic creatures. And then you, a mechanic in the game is hunting these creatures. And it's really cool. But did you guys get a chance to check out the announcement? And was there anything that stood out to you?
Just to kick it off, I did not get to watch the announcement. I saw one trailer that I'm going to talk about after we talk about this, but any person that ever got a I got a PlayStation like 2 years ago as well. Like I kind of missed the boat when it first came out, the PS4, but every single person has recommended Horizon Zero Dawn, and I think it's so now time for me to play it. But RB3, what excited you, and what do you think about the Horizon Zero Dawn announcement?
Well, I'm a huge Horizon fan as well. I've had my PS4 for a little bit longer, about 3 years now. But yeah, that's definitely one of those games that you crack open and it's like the most immersive like storytelling that you could get. And I love, you know, as selfish as maybe, I kind of love like only player games, you know?
Yeah, same.
And so I kind of like the narrative driven storytelling. That's why another big announcement that they announced was that new Spider-Man Miles Morales DLC.
Yeah.
That to me, I was like, oh, this is exactly what I was looking for, because the Spider-Man PS4 game is literally probably one of my top 3 or 4 favorite games of all time. Like I played it so many times. I must have played like 4 or 5 times, even with the additional Black Cat add-ons and everything like that. So I really loved and the Silver Saber pack too. So I really, really love like that game. And I want to see them. I want to see what they're going to do with it next. You know,
it's kind of confusing because I read this morning, like just like as I was kind of like waking up, I was reading that like what this Miles game is confusing because it's not like a new disc. It's not a new like standalone, but they call it a standalone that is built onto Spider-Man PS4, which we call that that's a DLC, but right. It behaves that way, but it is its own like narrative that has more to it than a DLC does. It's kind of confusing what it is exactly, and it feels like they're being a little tricky. It sounds like it's a port for the Spider-Man PS4, which is fine.
Yeah.
Whatever you need to do to get enough content at launch, we see with HBO Max, they don't have enough when it comes to launch and Disney Plus. But like, I wish it was a little clearer of like, do I need to spend $60 to get this game, or can I just play it on my PS4? You know, I can't really tell. But man, that trailer, I love downloading songs after I hear them in movie trailers or video game trailers, and I immediately downloaded that. I was just like, this is great. I am so amped.
So my question to both of you, when it comes to that, like, are you planning on, I believe the system's supposed to drop by the end of the year. Since it sounds like we all got our systems relatively later in the PS4 cycle, are you planning on getting it? And also, let's say this Miles Morales kind of works like a Red Dead Undead Nightmare, where it is not, it's an add-on, but it's kind of its own game. It's like half of another game, basically. Is that worth it to you to possibly, are you planning on getting a system? Is something like that worth it to you to invest in another system? RB3, let's start with you.
So for me, I always, every single time I get a PlayStation, I always make the mistake of buying the station right before they launch like the light version. Same. And I always end up with the thick bulky version because they put them right on sale right before they get put out the live version. So I'm like, all right, perfect. I'll just get it while it's on sale.
Yeah.
And then, so I think for this time, I think I've learned from my mistakes that happened with the PS3, happened with the PS4. I think for the PS5, I think I'm going to try and hold out as long as I can for the light, see if they put out a light version. Cause I like the system and I like the new engine and the specs, but you know, the design is a little to me. So I think a lighter, smaller design will probably be a little bit more ideal for my personal taste. But if I'm hoping that if it is a DLC sort of situation, or for something like Horizons, or for the other games that they show trailers for, like NBA 2K 21, or all the other games that they show trailers for, I hope they're able to also be convertible with PS4. Like I hope I'll be able to play the Miles Morales game on PS4 yeah. while I wait for the PS5. So
yeah, I agree with that too. I kind of hope that, like, you know, because sometimes you see this a lot with Nintendo, where it's like there's a new Zelda game for Switch and also for the Wii. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, cool. I'll just get the Wii. In this case, like if the new Horizon game also is on, there's a PS4 version. It's like, oh wait. I'll wait till the new God of War and then I'll invest in the new
PS5. What I was thinking. I was like, once there's like a new God of War or like a something like a tentpole like that, because like the PlayStation 4 was well worth the investment with even though Detroit Beyond Human was a little disappointing for me, but like it was an impressive game to play. God of War is beautiful. Spider-Man PS4 was amazing. Like, I fully agree with you, RB3. It was just like I actually, that was the first game. My nephews are like younger, and I brought them over, and I like, that's the first time I ever like try to teach them how to play like the PS4 with the PS4 controller with Spider-Man. It's like, yeah, you get to actually be Spider-Man. Like, I know we played like Spider-Man 2 and all the other games as kids, but like they had some wonky mechanics in there. The mechanics in this game, though, that inertia with the swing, then the fighting, that being so fluid, like the Arkham games, it's just perfect. And seeing how they could possibly use like Miles' powers of like the cloaking and the venom blast and everything, I'm way on board with that. And yeah, I'm probably gonna have to wait. You know, man, we're in a pandemic right now. I know you really want to launch your stuff. It's like, look at Quibi, look at HBO Max a little bit. Like, look, we don't. Not everyone's got that disposable income right now for an entirely new next gen console. But you know what? I'm excited. Also, kind of video game announcement. The 2K ported over the BioShock franchise to Switch, which I know that means it's not going to be as HD as like it would be on like the PlayStation, but I'm excited to play those games again on a portable platform, be able to take around with me, because those games are amazing. So I'll also say,
going to RB3's point about getting the slimmed down version, looking at the images for the PS5, it's like all of them have it standing on its side. It's like, I'm going to need to be able to flip it this way. I'm going to need to be able to flip it on its side and whatever. I don't need it standing up like a tower, personally.
It's a router. Looks just like a router.
Super expensive router. All right. So let's dive into this week what we wanted to talk about with, you know, everything going on in our culture in America right now. There is a direct, we like to talk about movies and TV shows and comics on the show. People that listen traditionally know this. And I think one of the most direct impacts, with everything that's happening is the idea of how, police and law enforcement are represented in media, because, it's like, I mean, literally, if you just look at what the Chicago franchise does, you've got like the tent poles of modern TV drama. You got medical dramas, you got legal dramas, you got cop dramas. Like that's how we make TV, like a majority of shows. Because it's easy to look at a job that is quote unquote supposed to be law enforcement and take quote unquote taking down the bad guys and build a and we've got decades of formula to build off of. But I think people have been talking about this, and it's time to rethink how rethink our as an audience how we're being informed by that media, and also for content creators, for the people that make these shows, they have to rethink how they do it. So we wanted to dive into that a little bit, and I think a good jumping off point, at least for Sam and I, RB3, do you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine at all?
I've watched the first like few seasons. I haven't watched very, very recently since they moved networks, but I have watched when it first started.
So Sam and I have been vocal that it started with Sam and then he got me on board too. We're fans of the show. I've heard that show in particular come up as part of the conversation as cop propaganda. I think people that watch the show, you know, it's a little more complicated than that, because almost every antagonist the show has ever had has also been police enforcement. investment been corrupt cops?
Yeah, I think that one time they did like a mob boss, but he was paying off cops. And you're like, the cops are the bad guys.
Yeah, the cops are the bad guys. That said, it does paint this idea of, you know, like the good cops trying to change the system, and which does not appear to reflect the times we live in, if we're being honest. And in particular, in Discord, Jay Shark said, if they were going to give new jobs to the characters of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where would you like to see their careers go? So Brooklyn Nine-Nine, what could they do? But also, how do we change? How could TV shows and movies change the way they depict cops? How should they change?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I do enjoy Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, I think it's a fun show. And I think what is beneficial at the very least about Brooklyn Nine-Nine is that, like, it does show like a lot of diversity in the police force. And it shows like, you know, a black gay captain, and it shows, you know, Terry Crews, and it shows like all of these, it shows a pretty like diverse kind of workforce that, you know, behind the police unit. So it kind of gives them a little bit more of an idealistic shift to the way we've seen police like over the years. So I think in that sense, it is a positive, as at least compared to like a lot of other shows. When you watch them, it's like all white cops. Like you watch something like The Wire, or you watch something, you know, The Wire, besides the, you know, the main detective dude.
Yeah. You got Lance Reddick, and then you got, I'm trying to remember the actor's name. He's actually in The Five, Clark Peters.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So you've had a lot of these kind of police shows like over the years, but at least Brooklyn Nine-Nine kind of reinvents it a little bit and kind of satirizes it to some extent. But yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Sam.
No, I it's just complicated, you know, because like there are people are calling for reform for like Paw Patrol, you know, like on Nickelodeon, and it's like it's have the conversations, you know, like it's important to, and interesting conversations come up with everything right now with the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. It's that reform might not be enough. It might just be I'm sure some people may have heard tale of Camden, New Jersey's how they abolished their police force a couple years ago and then reformed it and rehired cops, and since then it's been a much different place to work and it's been a better police force. But like maybe that's not enough for what we need moving forward, you know. And so it's complicated. The show, I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine does a very good job of showing cops that you want to root for. Not so much the sheriff that comes and corrals a bunch of corrupt cops, but cops that feel like they're looking out for their community. The way that, you know, it's that propaganda works. It works well. Yeah. But I think addressing this, I don't know if the show has the bandwidth to do it. They've done a couple episodes where they've talked about sexual harassment, or they talked about Terry Crews in one of the later seasons is out looking for a toy and he reaches for something and a white cop sees him and pulls a gun on him. And it's hyper aggressive. And it's an episode that kind of, I don't even want to say to the best of their ability, because I just don't think they did the best job of trying to tackle what it means to be a black man in America, but also a black cop. Like, I didn't feel like they actually like dealt with it, because they're at the end of the episode, they're like, you know what, together Terry and Holt, thank you, are gonna, you know, they're gonna tackle this together and they're gonna deal with this. And that was 3 or 4 seasons ago, and nothing's happened. It's like, I don't know, RB3, if you watch Harley Quinn, but they did it was a very funny episode where Jim Gordon is clearly an alcoholic, like very bad, and he's like, you know what, do we want to do a fun montage where we see cleaning up and we skip all the hard parts of cleaning up the alcoholism, and they just like skip past all the parts and now he's fine and everything's good and they deal with it. And it's like, maybe we see that with Brooklyn and Nine-Nine, they just kind of skip that process because it is a procedural comedy, and like maybe they just don't have that bandwidth to deal with it, but they're gonna have to, and I just don't see them doing it right. And I know the question was, how do you see their careers going? It's like, well, then the show doesn't exist. It's like, I know sometimes they do the season where like the band needs to get back together and they're all like working. They're a chef, or this one's a cab driver now. And it's like, but they need to come back together to save the city or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but I don't see the show doing that. They only have 13 episodes now a season. They don't have time for that.
Here's my thoughts. One, I do think actually Brooklyn Nine-Nine, going back to RB3's point about it being a diverse show, and you've got actors in there like Stephanie Beatriz, who I think are aware of this stuff. I think it might be in a unique position to tackle in a way that something like Law and Order or Chicago PD would not be able to. But my suggestion is that they all quit the police force and they become PIs. And they just decide to keep the name Brooklyn Nine-Nine as private investigators. And then you make jokes about, like, this is the largest. There's, like, 12 people on staff. Like, how are we able to afford a private investigation team? It's like, well, we're doing it. We're being scrappy and fun. I think they should all quit. That's my thought, suggestion for, what is it, season 7, season 8, whatever season we're on now. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to bring up, you know, it's one thing you look at cop shows, right? And even the shows that kind of depict corruption and stuff like that are from the perspective of cops. But, you know, our bread and butter here at Only Stupid Answers, we like to talk about superhero media. I'd like to suggest that I think it is time for superheroes to become outlaws again. We talked a little bit about Spider-Man PS4, and a big chunk of that game is Spider-Man being buddy-buddy with a cop and also tapping into the police surveillance state so he can find people and stuff like that.
The extra level to it is that it's a private multi-billion-dollar corporation that has given surveillance equipment to cops to use. Spider-Man hacks it.
Let's get rid of all of that. Spider-Man should be running from the cops again. The cops should hate Spider-Man. I think we actually have a question that relates to this in the Discord. STS2884 says, are certain characters better suited to address this issue than others? Like if Miles Morales or Superman make a political statement, it makes sense for those characters. But I feel like it would be tone deaf or pandering if Batman or Iron Man became anti-cop out of the blue. I would expect X-Men to address this, but they seem to be doing their own thing right now. My stance is I think superheroes in general should go back to being kind of like, law enforcement is against them. But what do you guys think about that? And also, are their characters better suited to tackle stuff like this? RB3?
I think that's interesting. I think that is something that I think why a lot of people went to and related to superheroes to begin with. I think that's why it kind of had this kind of like vigilante-esque, like kind of working outside of the system, you know, for a long time. And you know, I think when you talk about Miles Morales, he is in the unique position to kind of have like a position on this or a stance because his father is a police officer, you know, in the comics and in the storyline. So it's like, you know, his position, you know, kind of comes from like working within the system, like in, just from relationship and proximity of his familial connection, but then also working outside of it and also just gaining his own identity and being his own brand of crime fighter. It's funny because I think a lot of movies today have actually kind of addressed the anti- Whereas something like Spider-Man PS4 actually did have controversy when it came out about the police thing. But then, you know, I think of something like Captain America, right? Like when we think of Captain America, he's traditionally in the comics. He's very in the comics and, you know, in the beginning of the Marvel and MCU, he's very like pro-government, pro, you know, law enforcement, pro like establishment. But then he has eventually throughout this comic run and throughout the movies, he evolves into like this anti law enforcement kind of figure who has a great like amount of distrust for like the way they are, you know, handling situations and stuff like that. So I'd love to see that explored. I love to see more Black heroes on screen that kind of, you know, kind of have a different and unique relationship with law enforcement because that is a prevalent thing that happens within our culture. Like I said, again, that's a great reason why Miles Morales is in the unique position to have a kind of a great arc and storyline. I know they're doing the new Spider-Verse movie coming up next year, so I'm hoping that maybe that's something they kind of incorporate into that. But overall, I think the conversation is needed within the superhero comic book landscape because comics have always represented something political and has always taken a stance and have always been something that has spoken to a greater conflict like in our world. So I'm hoping that maybe that's something that we see going forward.
That's a great point though with Spider-Verse because his dad is a cop too, that they've chosen to be, because sometimes he's a secret agent in the comics, and that's an easy way to kind of like, you know, he's like fighting aliens and fighting extra dimensional threats. You can kind of disconnect a little bit, but no, he is very much a NYPD cop in that movie franchise. So like, that's something that will probably be addressed. And I feel like the writers of those of the that specific movie are pretty intelligent when it comes to that. Or, you know, maybe it just doesn't get addressed. You know, like maybe it doesn't, because it's also, they seem to be teasing like a multiverse threat. And so like, I don't, maybe that doesn't fit into it, but
right.
I like the idea of, I guess I did. I mean, I'll just being honest, because I remember when I was reviewing the Spider-Man PS4 game, I liked the idea at the time that he was working with the cops, because it felt like it was working in a system that was good. But then looking at the criminal justice system with any kind of lens, you notice that there are major, major flaws. And actually, that brings up another question from Danny X, the Extreme. The next on Wednesday, I watched a lot of Law and Order SVU. Since there was a marathon, a lot of the time cops in these shows use clever tactics, legal loopholes, and other things like that. Normally, as the protagonist, we encourage / admire their behavior, but in the lens of what's currently going on and has been going on, I feel it's irresponsible to make such storylines just for entertainment value. How do you feel those stories need to be changed? And I fully agree with that. And that's what I've been kind of thinking. I've been just like thinking about with Spider-Man working with the police, it feels like a legal loophole. And it's icky. It feels icky, like that you're sending like a private entity to go take out, to go do the bidding of a law enforcement office. It feels weird. And I was thinking about Law and Order too, because I used to watch that show a lot as a kid. And especially when you talk about diversity, like that show was like 99.999% white, and then Ice-T's there. And he's like, wait, you're telling me that a murderer kills people, like a serial killer kills people for fun? He's like, yeah, Ice-T. Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, Ice-T, that's what you do. John Mulaney tells the joke better. But it feels like these shows can't really, just like on first thought, it feels like these shows can't really exist anymore with the current way people feel or have been feeling about the police force. But there is it, like you mentioned, DJ, when it comes to like PIs, we do like the idea of detective, hard-boiled detective stories. We like the idea of someone solving a crime. You know, it sounds interesting, and taking down the bad guy. But and that's what I feel like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, just kind of coming back to it for a second, it feels like that's what they were trying to do. But also it is they do deal with the police. They are the police. It is very much pro police when they're the good guys, you know? So it's more complicated, but anyways, throwing it to DJ and RB3, do you feel when it comes to like SVU and other shows like this using clever tactics and legal loopholes, how do you feel about it now? Or maybe how did you feel about it then? Like, has your opinion changed on stuff like that?
Well, I think, go for it. RB3, go for it.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I think it's interesting. Something else we tend to not think about when it comes to the NYPD, we think of, and other major police forces, but specifically with NYPD, is that is an international organization. They have agents across the globe, working for them. It is a major global law enforcement agency. Based out of New York. And so when you talk about surveillance state and stuff like that, it is serious. It's a serious thing. And I think I've always, one of the things I really liked about Spider-Man, it was more grounded than the idea of like trying to do good and everybody hates you anyway. But went with the cops as well. They also hate him. But that idea of being outside of the system, and it's something I feel like they could have easily utilized with a character like Batman. Like, I would love to see a scene in a comic where somebody's like, Batman, why don't you just give your money to the cops instead of you going out and doing it? And then he just turns on the news to any one of the numerous time cops have abused their power. And he's like, I don't trust these people, so I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? I think that might be an easy justification for why there's so many justifications at this point why people shouldn't trust the system. And that's a big part of our media as well. But to specifically talk about the loopholes, like, you know, Dirty Harry's classic cop thing, like, I'm going to do the things other cops aren't willing to do. And I think that's the best example of that I think maybe other shows can look at, even though it's a more adult skewing show, is The Shield. Because The Shield presents itself as like just another like Dirty Harry cop that's willing to bend the rules to do what's necessary, but very quickly lets you know, like, no, Vic Mackey is a monster. Vic Mackey is a villain. Vic Mackey is somebody that media has said is like, cool, but we're going to let you know that this guy is awful. And he's a villain protagonist. Like, you should not like this guy. And the only reason that the mechanism of the show is the same mechanism that made Breaking Bad work. We're just going to keep throwing worse people at them. So comparatively, you know what I mean? Like,
you still root for him.
Yeah, you still root for him, even though you know and you want for them to be caught and defeated in the end. And I think that could be something that we should look at. A joke I made with my friend the other day on Instagram. I found a lot of comic artists, and so a panel came up from a RoboCop comic where he's like busting out of the back of a van and kicking off a bag, literally punting a bad guy's head off his shoulders. And I was like, I would very much like to see a RoboCop movie where RoboCop's the bad guy. You know what I mean? Like, RoboCop is this murder machine that the cops have made, and everybody has to figure out what to do about it. Because I think that is more indicative of the culture we live in, and we need to think about, like, shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and stuff like that have made jokes or alluded to the systemic issues that plague this. And it's like, we're at a point now, especially in art, where it's like we need to not just like poke fun at it, but really like process it and deal with it and look at the cops that bend the rules and break the rules and be like, you know, a weird example I think is Quentin Tarantino's work, but it's very specifically The Hateful Eight. The Hateful Eight goes to great pains to articulate how the legal system in the Wild West worked and the difference between like frontier justice and all this stuff. And like, we like to think of the West as this lawless time where everybody just got to do what they want. And while there less, that is to a degree too, there were laws and there were ways to do things. And I think our media would benefit by taking a hard look at like the reality of the way laws work, the intent with the way laws work, and maybe start suggesting ways that they can be changed, because media does affect the way people view stuff. I think the when you talk about this whole argument of like a few bad apples, like, you know, somebody pointed out on Twitter, like, has anybody actually ever had a positive interaction with the police? And I realized any positive feelings, I've had like 6 or 7 interactions with the cops. None of them were good. None of them were positive. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about the times where I'm like, well, support the police, I think about movies. I think about TV shows. I think that's what I think about, not my actual life interactions. Mm-hmm. So it is important the way media represents that. But RB3, what do you think about this idea of like the cop working outside the system and bending the rules to catch the bad guy?
Well, you know, I actually, it's funny because it goes a lot of ways, right? Like the private PI stories and the private detective stories are kind of the reasons why I kind of started liking movies and loving movies. Like noir movies are my favorite genre. So like, same. Those old school black and white, you know, like the private Dick who's going in and he kind of has to work around the police to figure out the crimes. And that's what a lot of old movies was. But then back in like the 60s and 70s, we saw this transition from like the one man who does it all by himself to the transition of the team that does it. And that's when it went from less about the private detective and more about the police unit. And that's why a movie like Dirty Harry became so popular, because it was like a dude within the police system who did have a badge and was working as an officer, but he was breaking the rules and bending them. So I think, you know, I personally, you know, it's been a thing that has been like, you know, praised and celebrated for a lot of cinema. We obviously think of Dirty Harry when we think of like the iconic quotes and like the imagery and the giant gun being pointed towards the camera.
Yeah.
But what is kind of missing in that conversation is the black dude who's on the other side of that gun.
Yeah.
And they don't. And every time I watch that movie, that's striking to me how kind of overtly kind of problematic that is. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of, and then you start looking at, you know, the private detective stories and you start looking back at those and you think, well, they're not necessarily the most ethical either. So then, you know, I think that's why, again, another reason why people love comic books, because it's a figure, somebody like Batman, who is essentially a private detective.
Yeah.
But he's working outside of the system, and we identify with him because of, you know, because we identify with Batman because he represents something that we all aspire to be, like the justice that we want to see enacted, but that the police just can't get done.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's tough, but, and, you know, I think about how much the conversation has shifted since then, right? Like, how much of before it used to be this kind of narrative of like, it's an entirely good system with a few bad apples. And now I think in recent times, at least, like the conversation's kind of shifted a little bit to the entire system is bad except for a couple of good people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine is so, you know, good and has like such a big following. I think about that movie, The Other Guys, with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
And like how in that show, like pretty much every single other cop in that show is like pretty terrible, except for Will Ferrell. And he's like, him himself is not like the greatest either, but at least like they're going up against like a corrupted system, and they ultimately end up winning in the end. So I think having kind of showing that side of the equation a little bit more, and kind of showing, you know, telling these stories of like real life, not real life necessarily, but telling stories of the other side of the perspective, right? Like the person who, you know, like in Dirty Harry, I'm going to go back to Dirty Harry for a second. Instead of showing the dirty cop, maybe show the story of the criminal who got led to that path,
yeah,
not to his own fault, but to the fault of like the environment and the system that kind of molded that. Anyway, and that's why I love that show When They See Us on Netflix, because it really shows you like the perspective of these young, innocent Black and brown kids who were accused of this crime, the Central Park Five, yeah, and how much the police kind of forced that on them and how much of an impact that makes. So,
yeah,
there's ways you could redo media and revise the way we think about media while still keeping the procedural genre, because I personally love shows like X-Files, like Twin Peaks,
yeah,
you know, like there's this British show called Cracker that came out in the 90s. And then, you know, Sherlock, like, yeah, I don't want to see those shows go away, because those are really fun shows that aren't necessarily condoning police brutality and condoning lawlessness amongst the police force and law enforcement. But it's actually just subverting the genre a little bit and gives you a little bit more of a different perspective. So,
absolutely.
Actually, speaking of media and other like you mentioned Sherlock, you mentioned other like versions of telling the cop story, but like thinking of like superheroes specifically, Green Lantern is an intergalactic cop, and name a time when the comics actually dealt with the fact that he is a law enforcement officer, that he
keep going.
Like, name a time where they've ever dealt with like a law enforcement, like being a law enforcement officer and what that means, because you were chosen by entities that choose not to ever have an emotional reaction to a situation, which is like on basic grade school thinking, great, like don't have an emotional reaction, but like and the idea that a character is able to force their will so much they can literally make the universe bend around them to get justice, or to make, yeah, a big punching glove to punch a bad guy in the face. But like to actually have to deal with the fact that like they, an outside entity has chosen you to enforce some form of law on billions of lives, trillions of lives over billions of worlds. And it's like, that's, I mean, the idea, surface level, fun idea,
yeah,
you know, fun idea of a space cop. But it's as fun as is an idea of like a space taxi driver. You're like, mm-hmm, oh, that's fun. Like, but like, what is it? What does that even mean? Because they've really never taken a dive into that and what that means exactly for Hal Jordan or Kyle Rayner or any other Green Lanterns. And I think that'd be interesting. I don't know about for a movie, but like, there's been billions of comics on Green Lantern. We could tell one story that actually dealt with the fact that he is a cop.
Well,
like, to actually talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of that too is this, it goes back to the media assumption that cop equals good guy, mm-hmm, and that if cop bad, cop corrupt, right? And it never really tackles the idea of maybe the entire system of cop bad. You know what I mean? Maybe this whole way we're thinking about it is not correct. And I think with the ambiguity about the Guardians, I think if you did Green Lantern, you could like maybe enforcing the Guardians will isn't the best thing for the galaxy. But to,
that's the point of the story a lot is like Hal and the Guardians bump heads, but it really comes down to like one man making a call for like an entire world's justice system. And you're like, that's not a good idea either.
And also the idea of diving into different planets would have completely different cultures and different law sets. I will say one time that they did that I know of that really did kind of dive into, at least dance with that a little bit, is Denny O'Neill's iconic run with Green Lantern and Green Arrow. Mm-hmm. And good just call. as RIP to Denny O'Neill, who passed away recently, a iconic comic book creator, my go-to Denny O'Neill story is he did a run on The Question that is like the – he didn't create The Question, but his run on the character is like the iconic run on the character with Dennis Cohen. And so all right, rest in peace Denny O'Neill, and his his goals to push that medium towards being more inclusive and telling stories that reflected the times while still being cool like superhero stories. And you know, that's hopefully we will see more of that. I hope it seeps into. My concern isn't like the shows I love, because the shows I love are like The Shield and The Wire and stuff like that, that were already kind of like plugged into what was happening in our culture. I hope that what we're seeing now will trickle down into and affect the NCISs, the Law and Orders, the stuff that a majority of Americans watch, and kind of affect... you know, RB3, you were talking about the old noir stories, stuff like, you know, Maltese Falcon and stuff like that. And we look at, you know, a lot of that media came in from the hard-boiled stories came in from the 30s to the 50s. A lot of the superheroes we love came in the 30s to the 50s. And there's a lot of sense of, I think, pushback against law enforcement because there's a lot of corruption coming out of, I would imagine that's coming out of Prohibition and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And like you look at movies like Godfather and Goodfellas and stuff like that where the cops are kind of like mobbed up. And it's like, well, you know, maybe we'll let you guys mob up again. Just stop killing minorities. You know what? We'll do a trade. You guys just stop killing minorities and maybe you can get a little bit of that mob money back. We'll just, you know, if you guys have to be corrupt, maybe the system has to be corrupt. I don't know. We'll trade.
Wearing the Punisher logo. Yeah, please, for the love of Christ, stop wearing the Punisher logo. It's so tone deaf.
By the way, they did, which this felt like a little, like, considering how aggressive the Punisher is, this felt like a little, like a little slap on the wrist when he's like, don't wear my logo. In the comics, like, don't wear my logo, wear the Cap logo. Punisher should fucking hate the cops, because you know what the cops did when his family was murdered? Not a goddamn thing. Not a goddamn thing. And so Punisher should not like the cops. That's my opinion. Obviously, it'll change depending on whoever's writing it, but... As we're wrapping up, RB3, do you have any final thoughts on like law enforcement and media and the shows and the movies we love and maybe how they can help inform us better?
Well, I think that having more people of color in front of the camera and behind the camera,
yes,
and especially behind the camera, really helps kind of tell these kind of stories. I think one of my favorite, and not just in media, but in comic book writing and everything in general. A key example I think of in movies recently is Black Klansman from Spike Lee.
Yeah.
That's a movie that showed a police force that did have a policeman as the hero, but actively discussed the wherewithals of that, discussed the social implications of that on the Black community, and was also ultimately pro Black at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, stories like that are primed to be told. You know, think about comic books, like you said, you made the perfect you know, comparison with Denny O'Neill. You know, Green Lantern. I think the issue number was number 76, if I'm not mistaken, where it's a Black dude actually confronts Green Lantern and tells him, like, you care all about the orange skins and all these different skins, but what about the Black skins? So it's like, you gotta, you know, the more we kind of incorporate that messaging. And salute to, you know, one of my favorite comic book series runs lately has been the Tariq Nasheed run, Black Panther, and how it kind of explores like Wakanda and how you know, the kind of intricate systems that kind of come with that. And I think we just need more positivity when it comes to the portrayal of African-American and Black characters in comics and on screen and just everywhere in general. So I would just want to just say, just shout out to the Black creators, shout out to everybody who is preaching a positive message, and salute to the allies who are out there helping us too. And I also think, like, I know you guys have done like Watchmen recaps with Ed Greer and everything like that. But I think Watchmen is also another perfect example of a show that like perfectly encapsulates the struggle and dynamic of law enforcement while also being like, while also holding accountable, like the people who need to be held accountable in that show. Mm-hmm. And I think Watchmen is like so ahead of its time. I think I don't know how Watchmen like literally became like so prevalent today, like when it came out, like way before all this stuff, but even the whole thing with the mask and the, and the police brutality that's portrayed in that show and the ultimate methods that they go to figuring out the mystery behind it. And I think you know, more stuff like that is crucial. And I think just in general, I hope that we see more. I think another way that cop shows can ultimately reform too is having cops that care about the community and are actually doing positive things as well. And I think that is ultimately where we need to take it. I think the reason why people love superheroes and comics and why I love superheroes and comics, I'm wearing my Marvel shirt right now. I think ultimately it's because like it shows they're not like superheroes aren't necessarily cops, but they're law enforcement people mm-hmm. who are actually doing good things and servicing the community and being part of the community that they're in. You know, my friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, the reason why people love Spider-Man is because he's from the community. So I think that having police shows that represent police who are from their community and doing good and doing positivity, I think is essential. And I think showing reform and the fight against corruption and the fight against negativity and all that stuff is the ways we could kind of hope for a better change in our media. Because at the end of the day, media is the biggest thing that people consume. TV shows are the biggest things ever. Like everybody watches TV, everybody watches movies. Yeah. Everybody to some extent or another may not exactly read comics, but are familiar with the stories and or eventually get the stories like on screen.
Yeah.
So re-envisioning all of that for positivity and for community, you know, involvement and for fighting against corruption, displaying that on media, I think it would be crucial to the good fight and to helping reform the criminal justice system in our country right now.
Amen to that. You did.
Thank you, man.
Based on what you're saying there, I got an idea for like a movie that begins with that opening crawl, like in a world where the cops actually give a shit about their job and defending the community. You're like, I'm interested to see where this fantasy movie goes. Oh,
let's see it. Let's see if they can pay this off.
Yeah.
Right.
By the way, I mean, just I think I recommended it last week, but I watched the documentary from Ava DuVernay's company, 13th. It's a Netflix documentary, and it's very well done, and they do a really good job of demonstrating how the police force even came to be in America and what the basis of it was. Like, yes, like I think I don't need to say this, but I feel like I need to say it. It's like, you know, people aren't asking for like there to be like a lawless land. Yeah, people want people to follow rules and be nice to each other and not steal shit from each other and murder each other. But the cops are doing some really bad shit, and they've been doing it for hundreds of years now. So we need to change that. And and 13th does a good job of illustrating that, like, a big part of cops' jobs in like the 1800s was catching slaves and bringing them back down to the South. Like that was a big part of their job. And after that, you saw how laws were put in place to basically recapture Black people in America, putting them into prison and making them as free labor for people during Reconstruction. You can just it's just laid out plainly there. It's very objective in the way that it tells its story the way it lays out history that was not taught in American schools. And it's well worth watching just to kind of get an idea of what kind of reform people are looking for. Not just stop shooting Black people. Like there is more to that when it comes to systemic changes. So again, a big part of what's happening right now is people asking, let's just be honest, white people to be educated and stop being like, wait a second, this is how it is? Yeah, we do this like every 20 years. Like, just mm-hmm. like go and educate yourself. Like, and I'm guilty of this. I have to say that.
I think if anything, it's not, I've been, seeing, a lot of this too. And I think it's not necessarily like all of white people's fault. I think they just don't teach it. Like they don't teach it. Like you say, they don't teach the stuff that they show in 13th. They don't teach that in history books. I think the reason why we keep coming to these like scenarios and these like kind of conflicts and a lot of these protests, like every few years is because literally like, people aren't taught racial dynamics like from an early age, and it's kind of hard to teach people when they're like 25 30 35 40 50. You can't really teach people then at that point, because it's like it's a lifelong of built up misinformation mm-hmm. is kind of tough to correct in just one rally or one protest. Like it needs to start from the ground up from the very beginning, and they need to start teaching a lot of the stuff, a lot of the important racial dynamics and complications in this country. They need to start teaching that early on.
Yeah, and you mentioned Watchmen, where it's like, let's be real, a majority of Americans, maybe even global audiences too, learned about the Tulsa Massacre because of Watchmen, because of a superhero spinoff adaptation of a comic book. Yeah, and you're like, why were we not taught this? Like, why is it omitted from textbooks? And that's a great point that we're not taught. And I also think, I saw a comment on this and just kind of reiterating, because I talked to DJ about this. Like, I watched Remember the Titans recently, with great movie. And all it deals with, like, race issues in the 60s after the Civil Rights Movement and schools integrating. But, like, I feel like there's a lot of Americans that feel like, thank God we figured this out in the 60s. You know, like thank God.
Mission accomplished.
We literally just don't, all we had to do was not treat black people as like being disgusted. And like, that means we're fine. That means everything's fine after this. And it's like, no. We somehow the conversation stopped there. We need to still have that conversation. We still need change. But anyways, those are a few, that's a recommendation for me. I've said it last week and I thought it was really, really pertinent now. And anyways, just try it. Like, it's going to be a lot of change right now. And it's, just hoping for the best, and hopefully some of the change actually sticks.
Yeah, and I think to reiterate RB3's point, we talked a little bit about black representation in media in last week's episode with Ed, but also, like RB3 was saying, not just, more people behind the scenes, directors, producers, the people that are making these decisions, not just because to fix some of these systemic issues, but also if you're a fan of movies and shows, it will give you better, more interesting, more diverse shows. It will give you more stories. It will give you more interesting stories because it'll be from perspectives we haven't heard yet. You know what I mean? So if
you're all tired of the 75th Pacific Rim spinoff or monster movie, it's the same five people making those movies.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're a fan of movies and TV shows and comics and video games, you should be at the forefront of wanting more diverse storytellers, but also the people that give the storytellers the permission to tell these stories. You want that to be more diverse too. It benefits all of us. We should all support it. RB3, what are you, just one more time for the people that maybe are tuning in late, I don't know how that works on a podcast, but for those people, what are you working on? What are you doing? Where can people go to check out what you're doing right now?
Yeah, you can find me at our YouTube channel, First Cut. Like I said before, we talk about movies, movie reviews. We have our podcast, The Meaning of Podcast, where every week we talk about a different filmmaker and break down their filmography. Otherwise, I'm also working on a short film right now too. That's in post-production.
Hell yeah.
It's called Timestamp. We are looking to debut a trailer within the next few weeks.
Hell yeah.
Nice. So yeah, hopefully that's going to be good. But for right now, you can just find us at First Cut. And if you want to follow our social media pages, we have an Instagram and a Twitter account at First Cut TMO. So that'll be great to check out as well.
Mm-hmm. And make sure you subscribe to The Meaning Of. Hey, if you like the Only Stupid Answers podcast, you're definitely going to be liking The Meaning Of podcast. So go check it out. I'm excited to go check it out as well. RB3, thank you so much for joining us today. Please, OSA, you guys have always been amazing supporters of the guests that we bring on this show. Go give them some love. Go give those channels and shows some love. And RB3, we'd love to have you on in future episodes. We'd loved your input and your fresh take. And right now, like, it's just... with everything, like especially with the quarantine, it's just nice getting to like meet new people this way and like and hear new voices. But DJ, plug your stuff. Let's hear from you. What are you doing over there
in DJ land? At DJ Talks Trash, every place that matters. You can follow Sam at Sam Basher. You can follow Only Stupid Answers on Twitter.
Hang out the vowels from stupid.
Yes, at Only Stupid Answers, hang out the vowels from stupid. And yeah, we're going to, you know, new episodes every Monday. We've got new reviews coming out for Stargirl. The Harley Quinn finale is coming up soon. And Doom Patrol episodes are starting to drop soon. And so we're excited to bring you reviews for those as well. That show will be on DC Universe and HBO Max. But if you want our reviews, you can go to youtube.com/onlystupidanswers. Oh, man, I was so right up until the end.
You were running through it, dude.
You were doing so great. And then I just tripped and fell at the finish line right there. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, you got to admit to your mistakes. Hey, we grow. We change. Yeah. We hopefully are better people tomorrow than we were today. And most importantly, gang, just be kind to each other. Educate yourself. Drink some water. I know all of you are not drinking enough water, even though you're inside and there's not much else to do. Go drink some water. Go get some vitamin D outside, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.